Hello, my friends. I'm Bill McLaughlin. Welcome to St. Paul Sunday.
St. Paul Sunday is produced by Minnesota Public Radio and made possible by a major grant from the Minnesota-based General Mills Foundation, supporting excellence in education, human services, and the arts. Additional funding has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and by this Public Radio International station. Join us today with our guest, pianist Leif Ove Andenes.
My friends, we have a wonderful young pianist with us in the studio today, somebody I've wanted to meet in person for a long time. I've known his recordings, known him by reputation because he's been playing with all the great orchestras across the world, really. So it's a great pleasure for me to meet and to introduce to you Leif Ove Andenes. It's great to have you here.
Thanks very much.
You're born in Norway. Tell us a little bit about where you were born and where you studied, and we'll get on to the music shortly.
I was born in a small island on the west coast of Norway. Called Karmøy, and it's a little south of Bergen, and I studied in Bergen, actually. I moved there as a 16-year-old, and because I found this amazing Czech piano teacher, Jiří Linka, and he opened up all sorts of new possibilities for me how to express my music through the piano, and I've lived there since. Mm-hmm. Only the last half year have I also lived in Copenhagen.
Uh-huh. You have an extraordinary clarity to your playing. I was just listening to you as you were practicing a little bit before you went on the air. And it's interesting because the program we have today, we're starting with Debussy and then moving to Liszt. These are very great writers for the piano, of piano music. And it's not just like Beethoven's also a great writer of piano music, but the way Liszt and Debussy, to take two of four, right, they're very much interested in the sound and the color of the piano. And you had completely different sounds and completely different approaches to each section within these pieces. Is that it must be something you think about a lot.
Yeah, well, I try to, I mean, in Debussy, clearly, I try to have a very fluid sound of the piano, to create these images rather than clear vertical pictures. Mm-hmm. And that's generally something I like to, I like about the piano, not to make the piano not sound like a piano.
Right.
But, you know, have a singing tone, which would be more like a string instrument or indeed a singer.
The work with which you're opening today's program, music of Claude Debussy, is a work called Estampe from the year 1903. Estampe is something like print in the sense that he was interested in the Japanese prints like Hokusai. And Debussy, even though this comes right after the great opera Pelléas and Mélisande, didn't have a lot of money. And he said, if you don't have a lot of money to travel, then you have to use your imagination. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of what these three pieces are about, which make up Estampe. Right? They're sort of paintings or prints, and they take us various places. The first is to Bali, to Java, to the music of the Gamelan Orchestra. And you know, the great exhibits which were coming to Paris toward the end of the 19th century had profound effect on the artists there. In 1889, Debussy, among many other artists, went to see this exhibition of Gamelan music from the islands of Bali. And it always found its way into his music. So that's the first piece, Pagoda, it's called. Second piece, called Evening in Granada, is a sort of habanera rhythm. And the third piece, Garden in the Rain. You won't want to miss this pianist. Pour yourself a cup of coffee or tea and sit down to hear Leif Ove Andenes playing now music of Claude Debussy, Estampe.
Thank you.
what tremendously imaginative music that is. It's music of Claude Debussy from the year 1903. We heard his piece called Istvan, which is a sort of Prince musical impressions. It was played brilliantly by Leif Ove Andsnes. Boy, it's wonderful to hear you play in person. And to watch it, you go at it so easily. It just seems as if you're breathing. That music is so striking to me. Each one of those pieces, as I mentioned before, they are three sort of travelogue pieces, or at least paintings. Mm. First, pagodas is taking us away to some notion of Bali, Java.
Yeah.
And then the evening in Granada is quite striking. The second piece, the Habanera, where Debussy sets up this Habanera rhythm. There's actually a remarkable bit of tonal stuff that he does, where you're playing, after the very beginning, you're playing these C-sharps up high in the right hand in this Habanera rhythm, like a tango rhythm. And then the left hand plays a completely different music, which gets very exotic and reminds us that Granada in the south of Spain still has some Moorish, that is Middle Eastern, influence. What if we could hear just a little of that again? Do you know what I mean?
The beginning of the Granada.
Yeah, just because you'll hear in this, but it's so different from the first music, which is music of Java. Now, in this southern Spanish town, you hear a Moorish influence, I'm certain of it. Just magic, isn't it?
And it's interesting how this it like is the Habanera is first like in a dream, and then it comes sort of closer.
Yeah.
After a while.
In fact, I looked at the score. He says he asks you to play to begin slowly with a sort of gracious nonchalance,
yeah,
which is I love.
Yeah. And it's I mean this place where the right hand has the Habanera rhythm is a typical place where the two hands have to be very independent.
Uh-huh.
Because the left hand is playing the melody, so often I would deliberately play the two hands, you know, not together actually, because they should be like two really independent instruments.
Yeah, almost like independent inventions. If you were to watch this as a, say, the cinema piece, two different things, or a dance piece,
yeah,
two completely different things,
yeah,
are going on at
going
once.
Going on at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I was admiring that very much. That last piece is quite wonderful, the garden in the rain.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see just how much Debussy is in a world of imagination rather than merely of musical sounds and musical,
yeah,
logic. Don't you find?
I find it very. it's very difficult also to bring off on. Often on a modern piano because everything has to be images and. And I believe that the pianos, well, I know that the pianos were very different at the time, and actually the one I play today is very beautiful because it has this floating quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to very much avoid the vertical mm-hmm. sounds of the piano when I play this.
Yeah.
I think the pianos at the around the beginning of the century, they sounded very different. They were much more subtle. They didn't have the thick sounds of our modern pianos.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to bring that quality to it.
Yeah. Let's take a moment right now before we go on further to identify ourselves for those folks who have tuned in the last few minutes. Our pianist is Leif Ove Andsnes. I'm Bill McLaughlin, and you're tuned to St. Paul Sunday. We're moving next to music of Franz Liszt, and this is a very different way of thinking about the piano. And the music is 60 years or so earlier.
Mm.
It's a time when it's also a set of musical journeys in a way. Liszt spent some years in what he called years of pilgrimage, and I did a little homework on this, and Liszt had a very pleasant companion for these years of pilgrimage. It was a countess called Marie d'Agoult. Together, eventually, they had a child whom they called Cosima, and this young lady grew up to marry Richard Wagner after Bülow, but that's another story.
Mm.
During these years, though, they lived for a while in Switzerland. This is the countess Marie d'Agoult and Franz Liszt in Switzerland, and then in Italy, and it's from the years in Italy that the piece you're going to play comes from. The period was just at the end of the 1830s, about 1837, 38, 39. And wherever Liszt went, he was very interested not only in music, but also in literature and the art. And so the pieces that he collected in this book have as much to do with the culture of Italy as they do with the music, wouldn't you find?
Yeah, and this piece is called After a Reading of Dante. And it's not... there wouldn't be sort of literal You know, he doesn't put music to words here, but he there's more a sort of meditation over of what does Dante tell us in his writing, and so there would be everything from heaven to inferno.
Mm-hmm. I read just this morning, I haven't had a chance to look into this further, that the title, after reading of Dante, is from a poem of Victor Hugo.
That's right, yeah,
At least I'd known. And it's certainly, while we can't tell if it's the Inferno from the Divine Comedy, the opening intervals in the medieval were called Diabolus in music. You know, there was the devilish. Could you show us just the opening for a second, if you don't mind? These are all based on an interval called, well, fancy term for it is the tritone, or the augmented fourth. Listen to a little of this. And the tritone splits the octave exactly in half, in this case from A to E flat. It's exactly, if you were to count up all the half steps of the 12 tones of the octave, you'd be exactly in the middle with this. And it's almost like splitting the atom. There's something a little bit uneasy in the human psyche when we hear that.
Already sounds evil. I mean, just the first two notes. It's not very pleasant.
No, and it's a very interesting thing because it's the crucial interval that the medieval theorists in the cathedrals said, above all, you must avoid this. They realized this is the devil in music. They said, you must be away from this. Later on, from, say, Rameau, some of the French Baroque composers, they start to play on it quite a lot when they want to make something that's horrifying or full of fright or sort of superstitious. And by the time we get to Liszt, he takes over because that interval, the augmented fourth or the tritone, is at the center of the diminished seventh chord. I wonder if you could let us hear how a diminished seventh sounds. That diminished seventh chord has actually a couple of tritones bound together, and that's a very central point to Liszt's language. Charles Rosen, a friend of ours, has been on the show sometimes, says he finds that sometimes Liszt over-exploits the diminished seventh, but there's no question that at that time it had a very powerful emotional effect, and still does. Stravinsky and Bernstein both used it lots, and so did Miles Davis. So you say that when you play this piece after reading of Dante that we shouldn't expect to have the story of the Divine Comedy told us, but there is a shape to it. It's in sort of sections, this piece, isn't it?
It's clearly sort of telling a story, but I think Liszt, as many composers, wanted to tell a story without words. I mean, music in itself tells such a strong story, but clearly here is his very evil power, and here is also very, I mean, the religious Liszt, the mystical Liszt that he would going to explore more in later years, in his later works, is also very clear here. So the contrasts are just enormous, and also in the piano sounds, going from thunderous passages to very, very lyrical, beautiful passages.
Well, let's hear this piece now. From the second year of the Years of Pilgrimage from Italy, we'll hear the piece called After a Reading of Dante, music of Franz Liszt, played by Leif Ove Andsnes.
Thank you. Thank you.
Diabolical diminished fifths that we heard at the beginning become perfect fifths at the end of the piece. It's a kind of resolution. It was brilliant playing. Our pianist was Leif Ove Hansnes, who was playing for us music of Franz Liszt from the Italian section of the Years of Pilgrimage. We heard the piece called After a Reading of Dante, and you said before it seems to start in a way with the Inferno, and perhaps you can almost imagine it gets to Paradiso at the end.
Yeah. I think in the end there is a combination, but the Paradiso wins, sort of.
And throughout, it's an enormously difficult virtuoso piece, but there's great seriousness of intention in it.
Yeah, for me, there's also a strong sort of symphonic feeling about it, almost. And yeah, it is a really serious spiritual work, rather than a showpiece. You know, he wrote many pieces where he used the same kind of techniques, which have much more tendency of mannerism, and they are much more lightweighted. But I think this piece is underrated somehow. This is a really, really deep spiritual piece.
I read a passage in the work of the writing of the great Alfred Brendel, a great pianist who also is a great admirer of Liszt, and he said, Liszt's music is not vulgar, but it has an extraordinary power in it to reveal vulgarity on the part of a performer.
True.
And I would think, just listening to you play this music, that you must have a very noble soul, young man. Yeah, because there's absolutely no vulgarity in your playing. It's just very, very beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and as a result, you can hear the spiritual message, the mystical side of it.
Yeah.
Quite striking.
Well, that's what I said about Liszt as a pianist as well. I mean, that he was... The first thing they would say about him was that he was noble.
Huh.
That he was not a showman. I mean, and then everything else came in In addition to that, I mean, his virtuoso technique and you know, his improvisations, and that all the ladies fainted and all that. But that was secondary. I mean, he was a very noble musician.
Yeah, you seem to play a very broad range of repertoire, including, in fact, quite a lot of virtuoso music. For example, the Third Rachmaninoff Concerto. Now, that almost got overplayed for a lot of people when that film Shine came out. But in fact, folks, if you really want to hear a very great recording, a very different idea about it, very lyrical as well as virtuosic, you can check out Leif Ove Andersen's recording. You had a lot of help with that concerto. You had a great conductor and a great orchestra in there.
Very good conductor, Pavel Berglund, the Finnish one, who I've played a lot with and love working with. And the Oslo Philharmonic, who I know very well.
Yeah. But your other range of recorded repertoire seems very wide. You recorded an album of Nielsen's solo piano work. Very unusual and wonderful.
Wonderful music, which is highly neglected, even in Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you grew up in Edvard Grieg's hometown, or at least you spent your formative years there studying in Bergen.
Yeah.
So you've recorded a lot of the music of Grieg as well, the concerto and some of the other music.
I love the simple, the simplicity of his music that speaks so directly to the hearts, and his harmonies and it maybe doesn't have all the double layers of the great music of Brahms or Beethoven, but it certainly is great music.
Oh yeah.
All those small pieces, especially those lyric pieces and his songs. I've always loved them.
I even find the dances charming. I mean, they're just straight from the heart.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We have time for a little more music, I think, and this is a music. It's almost anti-virtuoso music. This is music of Johannes Brahms. If there are times when some of the great mid-19th century writers like Liszt seem to be showing you what they could do with a piano, Brahms always, to me, seems to want to disguise it. Brahms is actually extremely difficult to play, but he almost goes out of his way so that no one can notice. Do you find that? I mean, certainly this is true of the Concerti, for example, or the Sonata.
Especially in the later pieces, he becomes more and more spare. He finds that... using less notes means more in a way, in his language.
Yeah. You're going to play an intermezzo, which I love very much. It's in B-flat minor. The opus listing 117, number 2, suggests it's right at the end of Brahms' life. So here's a marvelous young musician, pianist Leif Ove Andersen, is playing for us now. Brahms' intermezzo in B-flat, opus 117, number 2.
Thank you.
remarkable piece of music, and it's really quite wonderful to hear this slow, sweet, melancholy intermezzo of Brahms played right after this virtuoso Liszt that you played before. This was music of Johannes Brahms, the intermezzo, Opus 117, number 2, played by Leif Ove Andsnes. Yeah. In a way, I have to admit, I think that touches me more than the Liszt.
Well, it's a totally different yeah. world, you know. It's more intimate. Maybe a deeper world, but certainly a different one.
It's nice not to have to choose only one, of course. There's a kind of almost a will of the wisp. I don't know if you have that in Norwegian, but that it's sort of like almost in the fog, the opening.
Yeah.
It's very striking. Yeah. And then the slow music, where he goes to major key, has for me a little of the quality of almost the Liebeslieder waltzes. There's a kind of sentimentality to it.
Yeah, and that slow swing to it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because right at the end, that slow sentimentality, which has been major before, gradually becomes minor. It's as if the as if the sun's setting.
Yeah. It turns into a darker color.
Yeah.
It's very touching when he suddenly just changes one note and the world just turns into another color. And that's what is so special when he uses that spare medium, in a way, of the intermezzos.
I wonder, you're still in your 20s. The whole world's ahead of you. And are there pieces you have not yet played that you are desperate to play?
Oh.
Many.
Many.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the great thing about being a pianist. I mean, there's such a repertoire. And there is a repertoire of well-known pieces, and there is lots of repertoire of pieces that one doesn't know, and that is still great music. And I find many pianists having a lack of imagination when they choose repertoire as well, you know. One always plays the same pieces, and and I also want to play, you know, the great Beethoven sonatas and Chopin and so on, but there is also so much else, and you know, there is a lifetime is not enough, so that's almost a problem, you know. I have to choose which pieces by Schumann to play, because they, you know, the first 23 opuses by his, for example, are all piano music.
Yeah.
So it's such a, I mean, the piano repertoire is a great treasure.
Yeah. Well, you know, it would be a very great pleasure if you would return to this program and show us what you've been learning recently and years to come.
Well, I would love to.
Yeah, thanks. It's a remarkable playing. Leif Ove Andsnes, thanks so much for coming. You're squeezing this in because you were just in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I should just mention this before we're off the air. There's a very famous, brand new, about 12 years old, 10 years old now, not even that, piano competition, which is done rather mysteriously. It's called the Gilmour Competition. And no one knows that he or she has been entered into this competition. We've had actually two now of the three winners on the program. David Owen Norris, the English pianist, was the first to win this prize, was on the program not very long ago. It's great to have you on. And I know that you were just over in Kalamazoo and you're going back to play a concert. So thanks very much for stopping over here to the Twin Cities to see us.
Well, it was my pleasure.
Yeah. You folks, I hope you enjoyed the show. You can find some of Leif Ove Andsnes' recordings via the public radio music source. Let me give you that number because it's handy to track it down. You can call 1-800-75-MUSIC. A nice feature of that, of course, too, is that it makes a small donation to your public radio station when you buy recordings via them. Drop us a line and let us know how you like the show, folks. We're at St. Paul Sunday, care of Minnesota Public Radio, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55101, or by email, sunday@mpr.org. That's M as in Minnesota, PR.org. All the time we have for music this week. Thanks again, Leif Ove. Great to have you here. Folks, make sure to stay tuned for great stuff coming up on the station, and make even more sure to tune in next Sunday when we'll be back here with St. Paul Sunday.
St. Paul Sunday is made possible by a major grant from the Minnesota-based General Mills Foundation, supporting excellence in education, human services, and the arts. Additional funding has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and by this Public Radio International station. St. Paul Sunday is produced by Minnesota Public Radio. Your host for the series is Bill McLaughlin. The senior producer is Mary Lee. The music producer is Steve Barnett. And the associate producer is Vaughn Ormseth. The engineer is Tom Mudge. The St. Paul Sunday website is produced by Nancy Blakestead. This is Marianne Sullivan.
We've been listening to the music of Anton Arensky as performed by the Eroica Trio, one of the selections on St. Paul Sunday's newest compact disc, Mixed Company. Visit our website at stpaulsunday.org to order your copy of Mixed Company, Music from St. Paul Sunday. This recording includes performances of Gil Shaham, the Emerson String Quartet, and many more, all recorded for this program and many not available elsewhere. And don't forget, your purchase of this recording helps support your station and St. Paul Sunday. Order your copy of Mixed Company from the St. Paul Sunday website, stpaulsunday.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.